Hello, and welcome to Season 10 of the Hope Motivates Action podcast. I am your host, Lindsay Recknell, a workplace mental health professional, speaker, podcaster, and an expert in hope. Bringing you these episodes with these incredible guests is my absolute favorite. I am so grateful for the privilege to share stories of transformation and to help you move through your own transformation with our one-on-one work together and with the help of the professionals who come on the show. The science of hope and positive psychology has had such a huge impact on me and my work. So I love that I also get to share knowledge, research, and stories from the evidence-based science as well. It is my sincere wish that you hear something that resonates with you in these episodes, that you feel the contagious power of hope, and you are motivated to take action over what you can control, all towards creating a future better than today. I have such a passion for this work, and I love connecting with my clients, with you, my listeners, and with the guests on this show to help create transformation. This week's guest, Yemi Magikajomi, has successfully turned adversity into a positive force to propel a vibrant personal transformation. She has learned and gained from loss to create a new vision for the future, which has translated into a joyful determination to succeed in all areas, despite her loss. Yemi's mission is to focus on empowering and motivating widows who are ready to reinvent themselves, helping to facilitate and engineer personal growth towards whatever their focus might be. Yemi also empowers single women navigating personal disappointment through her one-to-one coaching, public speaking, and through her podcast series, Widow Recovery Secrets. Yemi is a thriving widow, an author of Walking Out of Widowhood, a podcaster, a blogger, and a coach. Her tagline is Dare to Dream Greater, and she's doing just that. Let's get started and hear more from her. Hello, Yemi. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Lindsay. How are you doing?
I am awesome. It is such a pleasure to have you here. I'm really excited. I think you have an amazing story to tell that will be inspiring for other people. So why don't you just get started and tell us your story of how you use hope to motivate action in your life?
Okay. Hi, my name is Yemi Magikajomi. I'm based in the United Kingdom. My story, I'm going to give a brief snippet and then I'm sure Lindsay can ask me questions. But basically, my background has always been in mental health. I've always empowered adults with enduring mental health problems for the last 24 years. And I've always loved working in grassroots. But from very young, I've always loved working. I do use technology, but I like people. But a turning point came in my life over 8 years ago when my husband passed away. And I just found everything I'd learned in the field of mental health just kicked in. Because I'd worked with people who were broken and then I built them up holistically in so many different ways. Basically what a family member would do, from outreach to hospital, to bringing them into daycare, to getting them resettled back into their own places, to go back into education if they want to go back into work. So when I got to the turning point of losing my husband, because I'd met my husband when I was 21 and he was 23, and we were together for over 30 years or so. No matter how much exposure I had to loss and disappointment and pain, I met a big mountain. But the amazingly enough, though, I always, even when it happened, the first thing I had to convict myself with was, I will not be defeated by this. I cannot be defeated by this. And I think the source of that strength came and continues to come from my faith. However, when I talk on my podcast, Widow Recovery Secrets, I talk about faith, but then faith is not just about what we feel. Faith is fearless faith in action. And that's what I had to demonstrate when my husband died. And I also found I had to see beyond the present circumstances. Okay, so basically, so my journey was, so that was over 8 years ago. But to relate to where I am today in being able to encourage widows, I believe I've been able to walk through my grief. There's been so many factors that have helped me, but I would say, number one, my faith. Number two, my immense knowledge in mental health and survival. And being able to, because I've been one to build people up, I have to apply those skills to myself. Number three, good people around me. Number four, stepping out in faith and using the power of my mind to see beyond my circumstances. Number six, in spite of my pain, helping other people as well. So that diverted my pain to give, helping other people. And in doing so, my pain became less of a huge mountain to climb. Then number seven, being able to express my work in writing. I always did journal. And I clearly remember the next turning point from my loss was when it was a year and I was doing the memorial of my late husband passing. I looked around and I thought, wow, I'm still standing. I can't believe I'm still here. Although I did believe, but there's always the spiritual part of us and there's the physical part. And I thought, if I'm still here, I've got to write about it. So I started writing my book, Walking Out of Widowhood. When I talk about walking out of widowhood, I tend to explain it's a spiritual walk. It was an internal walk, knowing that I had to see myself through it. And then the grief walk, the physical part was literally manifesting day by day in little steps. Yeah, so I wrote the book, but because it was quite raw, I didn't self-publish it until last year during the pandemic. And the reason why I felt I was able to do that as well, because I felt there was a lot of pain around with people losing their spouses, a lot of new widows coming up as well. And I just felt in my spirit was the time to produce it. And what I finally did is I produced it as a book for solutions rather than focus on the negatives, but focus on the positives. And that also has enabled me to have an angle for my podcast. So as much as I invite widows to come and sit on my podcast, I get widows who have seen at least half of the journey of grief. So they're able to come on and encourage other people that they can walk the journey in spite of what they're going through. Yeah, and so that's my journey in a nutshell. I always say to people that when we lose a loved one or we face any form of grief, when we gradually walk our grief and we get to the other side, whatever the other side is for you, you do become a new version of yourself. And I say to people, from the loss, there has to be a new dream, a new version of you. So my tagline to widows, and I include now single women, because I meet a lot of women who have been disappointed due to loss of love or dreams lost because they committed to someone and the person disappointed. All the flaws human beings tend to have presented to them. And I just say, you have to dare to dream a new dream. As long as we're alive, I believe we have to have a new dream for the future. And for me, I always believe that something greater had to come out of the loss of my husband. And that's why my vision and mission is to continue to encourage widows. And another way I do it as well is I try to coach people one-to-one. And I get invited to speak as well. But I've always loved, even in my field of mental health, one-to-one work. I find I can actually quantify it better than when I do group work. Group work for me would be the form of perhaps teaching and equipping. But one-to-one, I believe, is most effective because you give yourself 100% as much as you can to the person and vice versa. And you're basically listening with no distractions. So that's my story in a nutshell. So I hand it back to you, Lindsay.
It's a beautiful story. And I'm very sorry for your loss. And I feel like you are honoring your husband and his, you know, what he meant to you as well in your journey, which is very inspirational to hear. One of the things you said near the beginning there was that you felt like your skills and your knowledge in the mental health space was quite helpful in your journey. So if there are people listening who don't have that depth of knowledge, where could they start? Is there a tool that was really helpful for you that somebody could explore for themselves?
I think a tool that was really helpful it's very important to be able to write down your feelings. Because when you're grieving, especially the first few months, you get a lot of people coming to visit you. And even people who've lost their spouses or similar would say, oh, I know what you're going through. But nobody can know what you're going through because everybody experiences their loss individually. But I think being able to write down exactly how you're feeling daily, especially at nighttime, because a lot of widows do find that the nighttime is the most difficult, especially when you spend most of half of your life with a person. So I think it's very important to write things down. And another thing is, you have to be quite real with yourself because society is afraid to see raw grief. However, when you can identify at least one or two good people around you that you can really be authentic self with and really tell them how you're really feeling, then they're the ones who'll be able to perhaps access further services for you. But you have to be real, because the more authentic you can be, the more you're able to gradually recover better. Whilst when we pretend and keep up appearances to those that want us to do so, the grief takes longer. And I find, having worked in the mental health field, when that happens, we tend to get sudden breakdowns. But the breakdown is sudden to us, but not sudden to the person, because they've internalized and not really said exactly what's going on inside. It's only when there's perhaps an admission or we go into the home or people, neighbors start to say things, then we realize, even though they were coming to us at the center, we were doing, they were not really saying exactly what was going on, especially when they haven't tapped into services. People tend to fall through the net.
How do they find services? Is it like Google?
No. I think in England, I always say to people that your gatekeeper is your GP, your general practitioner, your doctor. However, even if you, once you have family as well, even if you're not able, you can contact your GP. And I always say to people, that's why it's so important to have a good relationship with your GP. If they're not meeting your needs, while you're strong and empowered, it's important to seek another GP. Because you'd be amazed when you want to really tap into services, they tend to be the main gatekeeper. Some people, and if you've got a rapport with them, you find they do spend time and do listen. And in England, many times they will refer you to the suitable services. However, there are walk-in centres now in England as well, where people walk in. But sometimes when you're emotionally vulnerable, you want a familiar face. You find most of the time people won't necessarily want to go. For the first point of contact, they won't necessarily want to go into a walk-in center. There's a chance they will go through the GP they know.
That's very smart, very proactive. To recognize that, yes, you know, you don't necessarily know you're going to be into a scenario like that, but having this trusted medical professional or trusted advisor on your side when you're feeling well enough to have those discussions, that's a brilliant idea. Are there other proactive things that people could do that you wish you had done prior to your loss?
Perhaps what I've learned from other people, I was in a big advantage because I was in the field of mental health, and I also had a strong faith. I had a strong church community behind me. But however, other things that are proactive, I say to people that if you're part of any community, so for example, if you drop your children at school, you should form relationships with other parents. I don't believe you should just drop your kids off and not connect with people. If you're part of a synagogue, you shouldn't just go to worship and leave. You have to connect with people, because these might be the communities that you're going to, that are going to support you in times of crisis. So community is good to have some form of community connection wherever you're based. It could be your neighborhood watch. It could be your neighbors. So that's one thing to do. The another thing to do is, I think it's very important to always form new relationships as well. So what I mean by that is, with the human nature, we tend to want to stay in a comfort zone. So even when you're part of a community, once networks have been made, we tend to stay in clusters. But what I find is, like, when I go to my church community, after church, I tend to just look around and see if there's anyone on their own feeling isolated, and just reach out to them and say, introduce myself. Because I remember when I used to go to new settings and you were a new person, no matter how eventful or interesting the event was, or even when we go to business networking events, there are times when you do feel aloof. Everything's exciting. Then you get to the foyer where everyone's having tea and coffee. Oh, who do I connect with? There's always someone on the margin that needs a hello. And I know it's not always easy, but I've learned over the years to nurture that confidence, to just go and say, hi, my name's Yemi. Or like the other day, I was in a parents' evening event and there was a lady sitting next to me on her. And I just said, my name's Yemi. Is your child a girl or a boy? That's how I started. You know? So it's very important to connect wherever we find ourselves, because there's always a one friend to be made. And they might be the ones that are going to help you. And another thing I would say is, when I lost my husband, I also found that the people that were so near were not necessarily the ones who supported me. It was actually people who were in the next circle of friendships or acquaintances that actually supported more than those. I think people that are sometimes too close, perhaps they're hurting as well, or they can't really manage the pain. So you find someone not so in the next circle of networks might be the ones that would support you.
That's really brilliant, because what I was just thinking about as you were speaking was the people around you. And often when someone we know has suffered a loss, it's hard to know what to say, what's appropriate, you know, how we can help. Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense to me that the, you know, maybe the folks one step removed would be really great caregivers or people to lean on, because they wouldn't have the same, wouldn't be maybe affected by the same in the same way. Yes, so yeah. Do you have, like, how can we support someone who's moving through grief? You know, what do we say? What do we do?
It's quite interesting. It's an interesting question, because every person is different. So it's about obviously judging the situation and seeing. And then people have vulnerabilities at different levels, meaning you could go and visit someone who's lost their husband, but you might find they might come from a very close-knit family of siblings, or they might actually have very strong community ties. Then you might find someone who's basically coming to a new country and they're actually fairly new to the country, so their support systems are quite low. But I think the most important thing, I think the first few months, just to visit, you don't even need to say anything. Because sometimes people say, I know what you're going through. Oh, don't worry, you meet someone. You know, things that you shouldn't really say. But I think just being there and being silent is fine, because it's very powerful just to be there, at least for the first few months. And then because when there's a loss, once the funeral arrangements are being kicking in, there's a lot of activity, a lot of things to do. So people can ask, like, is there anything you want me to do? Do you want me to prepare the invitations? There's a lot of practical stuff. And even for the person who is grieving, it actually gives them a focus. And also you are able to say, well, please, can you do on this? I think the most difficult time is after the funeral. I think even during the time you're preparing and so on and so forth, on hindsight, the person is still in shock. I think it's around 6 months later when all the guests have gone away and when all the friends have gone, and you decide perhaps to not go back to work here and just try to process it, the need for support comes into that. So I think, like, I remember having a neighbor, and she was always persistent. She would always, because I was one of those people that I would rather you tell me when you're coming. It's a very English thing, but she just used to come to the door and I said, what does she want? So she would knock on the door and so, but it was like unexpected. But when I look back now, even though I didn't really want it, but I used to let her come in. But because of her persistence, we grew quite close, because she was the one who stayed the longest, that didn't give up. So sometimes people just need to have someone to check on you, because when you check on people as well, you might identify if they're being depressed, or if they're becoming low, slumping into depression. And that could be when a referral might be needed, maybe to accompany them to a GP or actually arrange an appointment and so on and so forth. But I think the more we have people around us, the less chance of lower mood. The more isolated we are, the chances you're going to fall perhaps into depression.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Especially coming out the other side of it. I know from, you know, my own past history at the time, I don't want to be around anyone. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to share my feelings with you. I don't want to do all those things. But looking back now, recognizing those neighbors, those persistent neighbors that were the best support to help me move through that. I don't think that can be underestimated for sure. I can also imagine that this would be hard work. you know, to keep moving forward, to try to move forward. What do you say to women and men who have experienced that loss and can't find a way to take that next step forward yet?
Yeah, I must say I've had losses in my life, but it's been the most difficult. It's the most difficult loss when you lose your spouse, for me, I can say. But what I would say, and I'm saying, is what is my bedrock and continues to be, was my faith. I've always been one to read the scripture. When everyone's gone and all the support has gone and I'm left on my children have gone to bed, my main solace was to read the word of God. Because in meditating on the scripture, I just found strength within, or spending time to meditate on the word, or I found words in the scripture that related to my loss. And I would just meditate, and from meditation would come positivity. Because that strengthened my inner core. I feel if you have an inner core that is strong, really strong and grounded, that's half of the battle. Because what a lot of us know is even when you've lost a spouse, life still goes on. Because I remember even when you wake up and the TV is still on, the news at 10 is still on, the sun is still shining, people are still taking but your life has stopped, at least for that period in time. So what is the anchor that anchors you within? And that was my faith. You know, and I share that even in my podcasts. I know people come from different, but I always say to people that I'm a Christian and there's power in the word of the Lord. That's what's been my anchor. And then I do explain as well that from being strengthened within, he gives me a fearless faith. Like when I had to take certain decisions or make decisions for my children or so many different things, it enabled me to be fearless in making those decisions. These were decisions perhaps I would confer with my husband to take. You know, I had to do it myself, but I always found because I'd had my core centered, I wasn't as fearful. There's obviously an element of apprehension, but I wasn't as fearful. And that's it. That's what I say to people, really. I found solace in the word of God.
Well, and it's applicable to all the faiths, religious or otherwise. That yes. point you made about finding an anchor, I think is really, really key, you know, and meditation. So it doesn't have to be on Bible scripture. It can be on, you know, inspirational quotes or somebody else's journey, and you spend some time in reflection and self-awareness of what that might mean in your own life. I think it's that anchoring that feels very important there. Because then you can, once you have that anchor in whatever form that takes, it gives you a basis, a foundation with which to draw on. That feels, that feels very helpful, very helpful, spiritual, you know, religious or otherwise, but just connecting to that spirit. And I mean, as you know, I'm sure there's so much science and research and evidence to support that meditation and that moment of connection with your body and with yourself.
But can I just say what helped me as well, which was fundamental, was I found a surviving widow who had walked the journey. And it was such a blessing to me, because just to see how she'd come through it was a daily encouragement to me. So we became quite close, and when I saw how she was doing so well, or even when I wasn't sure of certain things, I used to bounce ideas with her, because her children had passed the age where my children were about to go. It really helped me a lot, because every time she said things to me, there were such pearls of wisdom, or she would say certain things she might not even realize, but it made me sort of more fearless as well. It was like, it was very practical, because in spite of our faith and what our anchor is inside, we're still physical people. We need visuals. But my main visual was this woman she was more or less like a mentor to me in so many ways. And so anytime I looked at her, our daughter would do this, I said, oh, well, if she can do that, I can do it. Or if she does this, or we used to go out, she would say, when we're talking about finances, she would drop her. It was just amazing. So I always say as well that it's important to identify, or I used to read women who've done quite successfully walk through widowhood as well. That was another thing that helped me. I used to go and look for women who've done it. I used to say to myself, if they can do it, I can do it. There's no reason why I can't do it. So resources, I used to read a lot as well. Yeah, so those two, but definitely have someone who's already walked the journey. There's nothing like it.
Yeah. Oh, and very, very important. I mean, it's a lot of the reason that I started this podcast, in fact, and bring, you know, beautiful people like you on the show to talk about your journeys so that you can inspire others who may be a little bit further behind in the journey and you know, look at you and other people as aspirational. Like you say, you know, if you see that behavior modeled, you can, you know that you can have that for yourself as well. I think that's really, really important to call out. Look for those models and mentors. And interesting what you said there about, you know, some of the pearls of wisdom that this lady would speak to you about. And I imagine that she didn't go into a conversation with you with intention of, hey, I got to fit this in somewhere. You know, it's going to have this kind of impact on her. So I got to say that out loud. It's fascinating how we don't know what's going to impact or what people are going to hear or what they're going to need to hear. And so it just reinforces that idea of community and having these modelers and mentors in our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Can you tell us, so I imagine that this is how you started your business to support other women because of the support that you've received from your mentor. Yes. How do you help, you know, what's your process to help other grieving widows?
Okay. My process, I've got a framework called Widow Recovery Secrets. And basically the process is I say to people that everyone's story is different. So when, in terms of my coaching, I still feel you have to be widowed at least 3 years or more, at least 3 to 5 years. At the moment, I've got someone who's been widowed for over 5 years, and I think she's quite right there, which means she's now looking at reinventing herself. She knows what she wants. Yes, she's lost her husband, but she can see, she has a vision for what she wants to do in the future, where she sees her purpose. So when I work with widows now in the area of coaching, that's the ideal client. However, when I look at the other side, because I do have a blog, and the blog was aimed, I started writing the blog perhaps a year after I lost my husband. That was for people who were recently widowed. And I look at things like your routine, like, you know, the practical base, the first 6 months of how you're feeling. Because I met quite a few widows who lost their husbands, and within 2 weeks they were at work. And then they obviously weren't coping and they had to leave. So I look at areas of, like, you need to know, you shouldn't be afraid to find out what you're entitled to in terms of your employment. Number two, you shouldn't be afraid to take time out. You need time out. There's been a major shift in your life. Number three, you are going to feel low. There'll be times when you don't want to get up. There are times when you don't even want to even drop your kids off. But you process it every day, one step at a time. So I go to the practicalities. So perhaps the first 3 months, and perhaps what might be happening in 6 months. And then, so in my Walking Out of Widowhood ebook, I give a timeline in how I do it and encourage people, but still remind people that everyone is different. Some people might do what I did in 1 month in perhaps 2 weeks. Or I even talk about things like, if you're getting really depressed, you might need to get clinical support. For some people, because there's so many other things happening around us, like you might have lost your husband, then there might be another tragedy. Then you might be made redundant. There's all other additional things. And there's the other personal things, like loss like that can come with personal shame. That's why sometimes people withdraw and want to be on their own. There's issues around something wants to convince you to hide away, because there's something about the human nature that when we do lose, it might not be rational to those that have not been through it. There's an element of shame in it. Like, why have I lost my husband? Everyone's husband is still alive. What is it about me? You know, so that could come with hiding away, not want to see your neighbors, not want to see your friend, or feeling quite inadequate and losing confidence. So I thought I'd look at things like how to build your confidence back up, because it can kill your confidence. You know, before they were two and now you're one. And one thing I remember clearly is I remember going to a dinner event, and that was the first time I entered a room with some other friends and I officially felt single. And I thought, oh my goodness. And I saw the couples and I thought, oh my God, it was just really strange. So I talk about different things in my blog. And so there's different areas. There's the woman who is ready to see the future, who is ready to walk the future. And I talk a lot about opening your heart to love again, because by interviewing people from around the world, I've come across so many different biases, traditions, where people are more or less judged when they want to start dating again. But I say to people, when you're ready, there's no reason why you can't fall in love again. And be open to it if it's what you want. Some people don't want it, but if you want it, when you're ready, open your eyes. So I look at all those things. And in my teachings and stuff, I've done things like, I've got things on dating again, uncovering blockages. How do you know you're ready to date again? And a lot of positivity, just giving hope to people. Because when I talk on Facebook and live platforms, I talk to say things like, because some women say to me they're still married to their husband, but I know they're still grieving. But to encourage them, I say, because we live longer these days, so if you lost your husband at 30 and you decide not to ever marry, you could be on your own for nearly 60 years. Because we live or even till 70 years, if you're fortunate to live to 100. I said, I'm sure if you really look at it, put it in perspective, when you're feeling stronger, I do encourage you to hope again. And see, and so on and so forth. Yeah. So those are the things I touch on and stuff.
Oh, it's beautiful and so, so helpful. For whatever stage a person is in, I can imagine that people who are listening are going, yes, these are resources that would be super relevant to me. And I mean, this is a podcast about hope. So you, yes. I mean, you said the magic words there. I end this show asking the same question of all of my guests, and that is, Yemi, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope is, as long as I'm alive, I'm sure I've got greater things to do and great people to serve. So that's what gives me hope.
That is beautiful. Thank you so, so much for sharing your story and your work. You just have such a compassionate and practical, experience-based way about you. And it's been a real pleasure to get to know you today. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
And you, thank you.
Take care. Yet another incredible story. I mean, I literally say that after every episode, but I wouldn't publish episodes I didn't think were incredible now, would I? I mentioned in the introduction that it's my sincere privilege to share space with these guests, to bring their stories and their expertise to the podcast airwaves. And honestly, I learned so much from their wisdom at the same time. That's the thing about this work. It's in the storytelling. The language we use to express our innermost narratives. That's what has the most power of transformation. Sometimes, when we don't know the words to use, we just won't say anything at all. And that can lead to negative rumination, when the stressors in our lives can lead to burnout. The topic of burnout, stress, and why the differences between the two matter is something we talk a lot about in my most popular training workshop titled From Burnout to Hope. In this 60-minute workshop, you'll learn to apply evidence-based strategies and tactics to reverse your feelings of overwhelm and languishing and activate the hope circuit in your brain for a future better than today. It's transformational, personal, and, dare I say, guaranteed to increase your hope levels. You've heard me say it 100 times, but I believe that fear is louder in the dark, and talking loud about the fears, aspirations, and the anxiety-inducing situations we find ourselves in is an amazing way to move towards the transformation of a future better than today. If you'd like to learn more about language and how you can leverage the science of hope in your life, I'd love to share the From Burnout to Hope training workshop with you. You can find more information about it on my website at expertinhope.com/burnout to hope. I truly believe that the future will be better than today by taking action over the things we can control. And conversations like this really reinforce that hope. Looking forward to keeping the conversation going, so reach out anytime. As always, I'm here when you need me.